You know what? These ladies are not going to like the news I have to give them.
Oh, there is breaking news. We just learned that you know who has received a letter from Special Counsel Jack Smith notifying him that he's a target in the DOJ's grand jury probe of efforts to overturn the 2020 election. Lawmakers are reacting. Let's see the clip.
Former President Trump has done...
They just seem a little too excited, but perhaps not for too long. Not for too long, because you see, the network that they work for is about to be broken up in a big, spectacular way. That is, if Bob Iger, the CEO of Disney, gets his way. Pretty amazing, pretty remarkable. But what do we say when you go woke, you go broke? Look, Disney has had a lot of challenges, let's face it, over the last several years, some of which one might not even pin entirely on Bob Iger, right? He inherited a giant mess from the other Bob. And now he's trying to figure out what to do with it. Well, what he knows and what he indicated in a recent interview way out in Sun Valley, you know, it's where like, it's like the Davos for the media club. What he indicated was that he was very interested in selling off assets that don't perform. And that might actually just be television, including ABC News, which owns and runs The View. We've got a lot to talk about. Tucker Carlson getting a big sponsor for his show as he seeks, Tucker seeks, some $200 million. You know what? As Disney struggles, maybe some conservative media companies should be stepping in, rethinking the entire business of entertainment. I mean, hey, everybody's on strike out there in California, so why not? We're going to discuss that. And, well, of course, the Donald Trump news. He's now out saying that, in fact, he's going to get indicted again. We're going to get some reaction from lawmakers. Michigan indicting 16 people. They're on felony charges, announcing felony charges of 16 in that case of Trump supporters attempting, as they allege, to overturn the election. So we're going to get into that. Plus, little alien talk, shall we? Avi Loeb, the professor from Harvard University, is back from his big expedition. He'll join us. And do you know that there were some 700 gold coins just uncovered in the state of Kentucky from the Civil War era? Well, those still hold value. I don't know about the Confederate bonds, right? But the gold coins from back in those days hold value. We're going to talk about gold. We're going to talk about inflation. The CEO of show sponsor Legacy Precious Metals is here in the house today. Welcome, everyone, to the program. I am Trish Regan. Good to see you. As I always tell you, we are sponsored in part by LegacyPMInvestments.com. Go check them out. You can go to their website. You can also call them 1-866-589-0560. I always encourage you to use my name. I know them, of course, very well. And hopefully I know they'll treat you beautifully, but I don't know if name dropping helps. Give it a shot. Anyway, let's start here with the news of Disney. Disney having some kind of yard sale or fire sale, potentially. You see, the CEO is realizing that ABC News, ABC, some of these ventures, you know, they just don't make any money. Cable TV isn't what it used to be, right? FX, I think, is another property they have. Nat Geo. None of this is what it was years ago. Why? Because, well, everybody's like here, right? Everybody's streaming. But the streaming business is losing money and losing subscribers too. In fact, if you look at the last quarter, the streaming business of Disney Plus suffered, losing 4 million subscribers. Now you might say, oh, well, you know, isn't everybody losing subscribers because people aren't maybe spending as much? Well, Netflix isn't having that problem. Amazingly, Netflix gained some, 3.5 million people signed up for Netflix in the U.S. last month. It was an increase of more than 100% over recent averages. So that's pretty amazing. So Disney doesn't have the Netflix excuse. All it has is the excuse that maybe they're creating content that people don't really like. So they kind of need to refocus on that and maybe not focus on things like this.
Oh, there is breaking news. We just Learned that you know who has received a letter from Special Counsel Jack Smith notifying him that he's a target in the DOJ's grand jury probe of efforts to overturn the 2020 election.
Okay. Lawmakers, so the news business is turning out to be not so profitable for them. As a result, they're looking at possibly putting it out for sale. I want you to hear, this is an interview that was done this week with, you know, it hasn't gotten quite the pickup that it should, considering what a major headline this is. This is an interview out at Sun Valley with CNBC's David Faber, Bob Iger sitting down with him. And we may have to do a little bit of a translation here because they like to use funny words that don't actually really mean what you think they mean. But we'll go through it. Here he is, Bob Iger.
Transformative work is dealing with businesses that are no growth businesses and what to do about them, and particularly the linear business, which we are expansive in our thinking about, and we're going to look expansively about opportunities there because clearly it's a business that is going to continue to struggle.
Well, let's stop there for a second then and let me ask you about it. We're talking, I guess, ABC, the network, the stations, but then the cable networks as well.
Yes, correct.
FX, Nat Geo. Is it possible you would look to sell them?
We're going to be expansive. I think if you can interpret what that word means,
you know. You can interpret it. We're going to be expansive. So normally you might think, okay, we're going to be expansive in how we approach this. Like maybe we'll buy more TV networks, right? That's not what he meant. Not what he meant at all. Expansive in our thinking. In other words, big, broad. We're going to think of new avenues, meaning maybe we're just going to sell them all. So one analyst over at Wells Fargo tried to figure out what they'd all be worth. $8 billion is the number he came up with. The cash could come in handy because you see, Disney's on the hook for buying quite a bit of Hulu. They have to get more of Hulu, and they've already been contracted to do this at a rate of $27.5 billion. So it's also got this debt pile, like huge debt, $71.3 billion acquisition that it did of 21st Century Fox back in 2019 is part of that debt. So, you know, he needs money. So what do you do when you need money? You have a yard sale. And I use the term yard sale. Well, credit where credit's due. Bloomberg came up with it first. They've got a good title on their website about Disney's yard sale. But I'm continuing to use that term only because they're trying to get rid of their junk, right? What do you do when, like, you do your spring cleaning and you put things in boxes so that you can have a yard sale? Or up in New England, sometimes they call them a tag sale. So you get rid of the things that you don't want anymore, that are not valuable to you anymore. And when you look at cable, well, it's just not as valuable anymore. I mean, you might say, well, what about ESPN? They own ESPN. Well, ESPN has become a giant headache as well. So ESPN is allegedly another one of the assets that they might be looking to sell. And Apple, you know, Apple, the tech giant Apple, is allegedly, reportedly, in the rumor mill, looking at that as possibly something that they might buy. So content is critical, but the challenge with content, as you well know, as I have learned, as we have all discussed, is that the way it's distributed has been turned on just upside down, right? Like it's not what it was. Cable's not what it was. Networks are certainly not what they were. And so as people seek out content, as all of Hollywood goes on strike, then guess what? You're going to see more and more people coming to these streaming platforms. And so if he's smart, yes, that's what he's going to focus on. Not just the platforms itself, but also in terms of Disney Plus, having content that people actually want to see. I mean, it's not good news when you open your big kids movie and Elemental and see that it's the worst box office receipts ever, right? Like that was not good for Disney Pixar. But maybe if you focus on the movie itself, the marketing of the movie, et cetera, you have a better shot at getting a better turnout. By the way, Elemental has done a bit better since then. So it's rallying as more and more people go to the movies. But clearly, there's a whole thing going on here with the future of media. We are going to get to the Trump news in just a moment. But before we do, I think it's worth talking about the changes in media that are still coming. Tucker Carlson, as you well know, my former colleague over at Fox, has gone to Twitter for his Twitter show, but he's thinking bigger than that. And I want to encourage him and all my friends, conservative friends out there that are doing this on their own. I'd like to say, look, it's not just news content, right, that I think is of value to people. It's content overall. And so there's an opportunity for all of us to be thinking about how we deliver content, not just ourselves, but even the content we invest in. Because think of the entertainment space. Think of how, you know, you don't really want to watch anything, the movies. I'm like waiting for a good movie to come out. The movies are terrible. And the one I was looking forward to, Barbie, well, that sounds like it's going to be awful if you read the reviews. And, you know, it's just too much of a societal, cultural message that they're just constantly trying to jam down our throats. And I think everybody's pretty darn sick of it. So there could be an opportunity for someone like Tucker Carlson, if he's successful in getting the $200 million worth of funding that he's allegedly, reportedly seeking. Here he is just the other night.
But because Joe Biden and his many allies, from Chuck Schumer to Mitch McConnell to Paul Ryan and every single news anchor on all of television, all of them believe that Ukraine, its borders, its future, its infrastructure are all more important than the
Okay, country. We're going to get into some of those issues that he was talking about, but Tucker Carlson, if he's successful in getting the $200 million, I think has an opportunity to do something far larger than just himself. Because how do you really influence culture and thought process? I mean, academia is certainly one way to do that. And I think the left has that pretty darn cornered, right? And I think also what you see on television, what you see in the movies, what you see in terms of books and literature, all of this has an effect as well. And that is also controlled by people with a very definite political bias. Now, I prefer no political bias. I prefer independent thinkers that are willing to look at everything and have a sampling of everything. I prefer letting free market capitalism dictate where this is all going to shake out. I have a feeling you do, too. I want to mention we are in a live program here. So great to see so many of you here tuning in. We are live right now on YouTube. So I hope you're subscribing to the channel. If you haven't, do me that favor. Do make sure that you subscribe to the channel here on YouTube or on Facebook. Also, live on Facebook. We are live on Facebook. You can follow me at Real Trish Regan, and we're here every day. Guys, I love seeing all of your comments. I'm going to go out to a few of them. Stuart from Facebook is saying the movie industry is just done. And I would agree, Stuart. It's done. It's done. And it's of its own doing. Now, COVID didn't help. The unions aren't helping. But there's a lack of creativity there that is really coming back to haunt Hollywood in a way that I don't think it's fully ever going to recover from. And this is why I'm saying there's an opportunity for people who have a different political bias, or maybe ideally no political bias at all, right? Let's just make good, fun entertainment that people actually want to watch, and you tell good stories. We're hearing from Yellow Bear, Disney should probably split up. They own so many different properties. Agreed, right? It's kind of like GE. Remember General Electric? They just got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And at some point, they really lost their way because it just became a giant holding company. And you got to understand in life and in business what it is that you do well. And then you zone in on that. You focus on that. And you ride that as far as you can. Well, Disney has just gotten so big, and it's got all these different things, and it's got all these different political factions. And I think Bob Iger, who always wanted to build the company, don't forget, is coming back and saying, oh, wait a second, I got 2 years. I got to really figure this out. We had the CEO of Carl's Jr. on the program the other day, Andy Puzder, and he said he thought, and this was a day before the contract extension, he thought there was a good chance that Bob Iger is going to be out. Look, there's still a good chance that Bob Iger could be out, right? If he doesn't do what he needs to do, this could be one giant golden parachute. They'll pay him out and he'll go on his merry way. But investors, shareholders are getting kind of annoyed here. And maybe there was an excuse while Netflix was performing badly, but with Netflix actually gaining subs, they do have a problem, a very, very big one. Mike, good to see you. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood was very good. Yeah, you know what? I love old movies. I was watching To Catch a Thief the other night with Cary Grant and Grace Kelly, and I was like, oh, you know, this is just so beautiful. I mean, yeah, maybe it's a little bit contrived, but It's beautiful to watch. There's a neat story. There's a nice romance. Like, why can't we have some of that? Why does it have to be all violence and gory, horrible stories and a political message that feels really disingenuous? None of it is worth it. Mark pointing out that he hasn't been to the movie theater in, gosh, did you say decades? That's what I'm seeing here. Decades. This is from Facebook. Mark joining us. Okay, you got me beat. I can't say decades on my end, but it's certainly been a couple years, right? I don't think I've been back since they shuttered the movie theaters. I'm kind of like, well, who needs to go to a movie theater? Like, I can like sit in my house and, you know, have my own nice popcorn that I make, and I know where it's sourced from, and I like my house. I can sit here and watch a movie. Why go to the movie theater? Going to the movie theater used to be really special, but they've gotten kind of dirty, and there's lines, and they're kind of loud. You know, they always play the movies too loud. So I think people are like, well, okay, I can just stay home and watch this. And so these movie studios, companies like Disney, they need to actually figure out that model and how to succeed in this new kind of environment. And so we're going to talk about, you know, this a lot on this show. It's one of the reasons why it's so important that you subscribe. Let me see if I can put the subscribe button up. Well, if you don't see it, make sure you know how to subscribe. You just, you know, hit the subscribe button there on the lower right-hand side. I think that would be like right down there, guys. Do me that favor. If you're already subscribed, don't hit it, because then you'll actually be unsubscribed. But the other thing I need you to do is hit the bell, because then you'll know when I'm live, when we're here talking about all these really, really important issues. Well, one really important issue is the election in 2024. And if we are to take at face value, and I do, what Donald Trump is saying, he's about to be indicted again. Yeah, again. Can you imagine? I can. Donald Trump to be indicted again. He issued a statement on his platform, Truth Social. I'm going to read some of it to you. And again, he's accusing the government of major political bias. He's got some choice words for the prosecutor, Jack Smith. And it seems that, you know, they just keep coming. It's like you can't even keep track of them after a while. But this one is tied to January 6th. And he said he got this news on a Saturday night. Sunday night, forgive me. Sunday night. And stated that, quote, I am a target of the January 6th grand jury investigation. This is what the letter sent to him said. It gives me a very short 4 days to report to the grand jury, which almost always means an arrest and an indictment. He continues on saying, so now Joe Biden's attorney general, Merrick Garland, who I turned down for a U.S. Supreme Court in retrospect based on his unethical actions, a very wise decision. These are Trump's words together with Joe Biden's Department of Injustice. again, his word. Have effectively issued a third indictment and arrest of Joe Biden's number one political opponent, who is largely dominating him in the race for the presidency. So it goes on and on. It's actually quite long, but you can get sort of the gist of it here. He's alleging that these are just a whole bunch of things that they're never going to stop. The problem the government has, really and truly, in this is that they've tried so many times to get him before, and nothing actually turned out to be true. So that's why it actually sort of feeds into his narrative, regardless of what you think about whether he's guilty or not. The track record, shall we say, of, you know, the so-called dossier, well, that's pretty bad. Plus the track record of the government trying to pretend that, in fact, in 2016, that Hunter Biden was not under investigation when he was. I mean, that's just not a really good set of facts. So Donald Trump has that going for him, because I think people are extremely suspicious of anything that's happening. And they do say, wait a second, he is the guy that's running for president. So why are you going after him so hard? This was a sentiment that we heard loud and clear from Kevin McCarthy today, Speaker of the House. Take a listen.
Well, I guess under a Biden administration, Biden America, you'd expect this. If you notice recently,
President Trump went up in the polls and was actually surpassing President Biden for re-election. So what do they do now? Weaponize government to go after their number one opponent. It's time and time again. I think the American public is tired of this. They want to see equal justice. And the idea that they utilize this to go after those who politically disagree with them is wrong.
Okay, so this is probably a sentiment you're going to hear more and more. And the reality is too many people don't want Donald Trump to run. And that's on both sides. Let's be very clear. This is not just the Democrats. Look at all the money they were throwing at Ron DeSantis, only to have Ron DeSantis bomb over and over and over again in the polls. I could have told him that, by the way. I wish some of these big, big donors were paying more attention, because he didn't have the right kind of je ne sais quoi. He didn't have the right personality. It's certainly not for this moment in time when you're competing against Donald Trump. And so they spent a lot of money. He's not the right guy. They're looking around. There's, you know, talk of Tim Scott, maybe. Maybe some money will shift there. I don't think Tim Scott has it to be able to pull this off. I mean, the one interesting guy, and it's fascinating how quickly the media has started to go after him, is Vivek Ramaswamy, another self-made man who's using his own money to pour into his campaign. Well, sure enough, you read all the headlines and they're accusing him of all, it's just getting really, really ugly. By the way, the guy's like amazing, like went to amazing schools, has a beautiful family, sold, created like two biotech companies, sold them. He's like 30 some odd years old on top of it. Like he's like, he would be the youngest president in our history. Anyway, that is somebody who's not really getting enough play in terms of donor circles, in my estimation. By the way, like I'm going to watch everybody very, very carefully, and we'll continue to evaluate everybody fairly. But I think if I were saying, okay, where are you going to put your money? Do you really want to beat Donald Trump? Well, how are you going to beat him with Ron DeSantis? Ron DeSantis, who's actually trying to run to the right of Donald Trump. I've got a commercial. I'm going to play it for you. Not at this moment, but perhaps tomorrow, because this commercial came out and he's so right of Trump. And he's actually saying like Trump's not conservative enough, because Trump said he was going to be inclusive and include the LGBTQ community in a very fair way in the White House. And I'm like, wait, so that's what you're going after Trump with? It just doesn't add up. You can't run to the right of him. I mean, it makes Ron DeSantis kind of seem like just a mean guy. So for all the DeSantis supporters out there, I apologize when I say this, but I'm just a realist. And I understand what resonates with people. I have a fairly good sort of barometer for that. And I said years ago, like back in 2015, when everybody was laughing about Trump, I said, don't count him out. Don't count him out, because people like him. He likes people. And he's got the economic chops to actually be able to sit there and talk in a meaningful way about things like trade deals. Like, who was ever talking about trade deals until Donald Trump showed up on the scene? So with all that in mind, you got to find somebody who's smart. And I'm not denying that Ron DeSantis is very smart. I mean, Harvard and Yale, right? Like he's got all that going on, but somebody who is more their own person. And they have their own beliefs and their own convictions, and they're bringing that to the table, and that they can deliver them, right, with a certain enthusiasm and a genuine spirit. That's what you need. And the field doesn't really quite have that, obviously, in, say, like a Ron DeSantis. So you're seeing a lot of money now pull away. And big donors are like, well, wait a second, why isn't he doing better in the polls? I'm spending all this money. What's happened? So we got news today that he has laid off 20% of his campaign staff. He's going to have to pare down here. I think he picked some funny battles, such as the battle with Disney. I won't digress, but we've done shows on that before. And, you know, I don't like Disney any more than you do, but I still recognize that this is a capitalist country. So you've got to kind of pick and choose carefully. And you've got to have the personality and the policy to back up all that you're doing. He did a wonderful job in Florida, don't get me wrong. He's the only state that didn't close down. Wonderful success right there. And we hope that he is able to continue serving, of course, the people of Florida in a really, really meaningful way. But DeSantis, for sure, is in trouble. If you have not subscribed to the show, again, do me the favor. It's down there on the right. If you're watching on YouTube, you can just follow me on Facebook at Real Trish Regan if you're watching there. Or if you see this on Rumble, where we also have this video, make sure you do that. By the way, also on Apple Podcasts, I would love to have you guys over there. It really would be fantastic if, when this is done, I'll make sure I put it in the show link notes, the Apple Podcast. Please follow me. It's all free and you'll get it just as soon as it comes out, which is a little bit after this program, because again, we are live right now. Okay. We were talking a little bit in the beginning about gold, and did you see this little story in Kentucky? In Kentucky, they just discovered 700 gold coins from the Civil War era. In fact, they date back to the 1863 or so. They were buried and somebody found them. I'm just going through my notes. So if you are listening on Apple Podcasts and you hear all these papers rattling, sometimes my producers are like, Trish, would you stop playing with the papers? They make so much noise. It's because I want to make sure I have this right. The buried treasure actually was included all these minted coins from 1862 to 1863, when Kentucky was the site of some pretty fierce battles between the U.S. and the Confederacy. And of course, as you well know, all those Confederate bonds, they were worthless. But guess what held on to its value? And guess what they just found?
This is the most insane thing ever. Those are all $1 gold coins, $20 gold coins, $10 gold coins. And look, I'm still digging them out. There's one, two, three, four, five, six, six more gold coins. This is real.
Pretty darn good. That's a pretty good payday, right? I think they're worth quite a bit of money. According to the New York Times and the interview they did there, they're talking about each of these coins being worth roughly $1,000. I would just say one thing that's sort of cool about them, to me anyway, is just the historical value too, like considering when they were printed. So I would suspect that there's a little bit of a premium given where they were printed. Anyway, we've been looking at gold. It's trading up about 1% or so right now. And with all of this in mind, considering all this inflation, et cetera, I'd like to bring into the conversation our good friend, our show sponsor, none other than the CEO of Legacy Precious Metals, Charles Thorngren. Joining us with more on all of this, inflation, Charles Thorngren. He's the CEO of Legacy Precious Metals. I talk about them all the time for sponsor of this show. Charles, good to see you.
Great to be here. Thank you.
I've been promoting you a bit because every time I talk about inflation, I'm like, stay tuned. Charles is coming up. So we're glad you're here. One of the things that I've been talking about, of course, is the good news, which is that we're seeing inflation come down. I mean, it still doesn't necessarily, like when you add up everything that has been up, we're still up, like I think the raw numbers are some 16% over the last several years. But the good news is we are coming down, and yet it's not perfect because you're still worried about the Fed. I'm still worried about the Fed in terms of raising. And we think, okay, maybe that's good for the dollar. Maybe that's good. But you have a different view on that. You still think that they're going to raise, and you still think it's not necessarily good for the U.S. economy. Walk us through that.
They have no choice but to raise. And I know I'm saying something different from everyone else out there.
That's why we like
you. You give us a teaser that inflation's coming down, yet the core has barely budged. Yeah. So look at that number realistically. The core inflation rate has barely budged. And we're at a time now where people aren't spending on goods necessarily. They're spending on vacation. The things that in vacation spending does are not included in things outside of the core. So the numbers they're using are a little bit confusing. Mm-hmm. So when I say that, the Fed has already said we're raising rates this month. That's going to happen. They're going to raise again at least once more this year. And they're going to raise again next year as well. I know people are
okay.
Like,
well, they we have should, to. I mean, like they have back. To. Yeah. No, I hear it. I by the way, like I wish they had done this a long time ago, so we weren't in this position. But what happens when they raise? Because that's the real tricky thing. Like people forget, like that whole regional bank crisis that we just went through, and we think is all said and done, right? That may not be the case, because if they raise all these banks, they have to keep treasuries on their books. They have to mark to market every single night. So does that mean the banks don't have enough sort of money, enough liquidity like they thought they were going to have?
This is definitely true. And another thing that most people aren't considering, and this is where it hits really heavy, it's in commercial real estate. As we raise more and more, you're going to see the kind of real estate coming back, that flow of properties back to the banks, but in a much larger fashion. This isn't your $300,000, $400,000 home. This is your $200 million tower that's being sent bank. And we're seeing that. There was one in Atlanta, a $212 million default just this month. And commercial real estate, unfortunately, it's banks, but it's also the stock market. Every REIT that everyone buys, and we've been told real estate forever, right? Oh, here's a great way where you're not managing it. It's in this REIT. The amount of foreclosures that are coming is astronomical. It's astronomical. It's a 20% default rate on commercial mortgages right now. And that's not even the worst of it. The worst of it is in pockets, it's going to be more than that, right? San Francisco. Let's take a look at San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Property is coming back because there's nobody there. They're leaving. They can't do business. So you're going to have a bigger effect there. You know, Atlanta. Atlanta's suffering too. I think they're at 22% default right now. So these are the things that most people don't think about, but this is all part of the big economic process. Because if you don't have commercial real estate being leased out, that means companies aren't growing. That means business isn't growing. This is how a extended recession happens. The economy is easy, but it's tricky if you don't look at the entire picture. And that's what we have. We have a Fed that's looking at numbers that they want to talk about, whether it's politically based or it's just because they don't want the backlash. Sure. I don't know. I'm not going to make the assumption, but a lot of the wrong things are being done, because at some point, as this gets worse, right? And think about it. Recession comes, it's going to get bad. And what are they going to do then? They're going to release money again.
Oh, boy.
The biggest problem, we still have a bloated balance sheet. Yeah. So you're going to see a scenario to where the dollar's going to get even weaker than it is right now.
Yeah. No, look, I'm just going to say this for the viewers, and this is not financial advice. It shouldn't be interpreted that, but I invest in gold because it helps me sleep at night because of exactly what you're talking about. Look, the market is the market. And the problem is, like, it's very hard to time the market. If you've got a 20-year time horizon, I get it. But, you know, I look at gold as one of those things that hopefully provides some consistency. It doesn't always go up. But when things start to, you know, it's like insurance. That's how I think of it, right? Like, because if the market really gets shaky, and look, the market's been okay. And, you know, we have ChatGPT-4, I guess, to thank for that, all these technological advances that are saving some of those tech stocks. When you drill down, by the way, on the S&P 500, what you actually find, it's these tech companies that, you know, those that invested in this new technology that will be the future, they are really helping to support the overall index. But I just feel like that's, you know, that's for me, and, you know, everybody's different. I feel like it's one of those places that I can go to depend on something in the future. How do you think about it?
You know, that's the correct mentality. I've been,
I just wish
so
I had more of it.
That
that's what I always say.
Yeah, you know, I've been metals in so long that I kind of time it a little bit, and even I can't time it correctly all the time. Right. If you have no gold in your portfolio now, don't worry about timing it. Get diversified. That's the first thing, right?
Yeah.
Get some diversification. And then if you see a timing opportunity, sure. I'm not a big fan of people timing the market, right?
No.
Get some common sense. Figure out what makes sense for the long term. Buy and hold.
Yeah.
That's the best way.
Let me ask you about silver, because you and I don't talk about silver enough. And when I look at the chat messages and I see, you know, they're always boom, you know, everybody's asking about silver. And silver's neat because it's a little bit more affordable. Although on your website, I think on legacypminvestments.com, you guys should go check it out. Again, we're talking with Charles Thorngren. He is one of the sponsors, first sponsor of the Trish Regan Show. And he runs legacypminvestments.com, and you can actually buy and sell gold and silver right there. Could you buy like a small, it's not like you have to buy like a big gold bar. You can buy smaller portions of gold there, but you can also buy silver. Tell us a little bit about that platform, and then we'll get into silver prices.
You know, the platform was created so that everyone has access. This is really what it comes down to. Mm-hmm. There's no minimum. If you want to go on there and you let's say you're just starting out in your investment, you're a younger person, you know, you want to create your portfolio for later, mm-hmm. you can go there and you make recurring payments. You can mm-hmm. use small dollar amounts. You can make it like an automatic savings plan. It was done this way so that everyone has access, mm-hmm. whether you're doing large transactions, small transactions, transactions to be delivered, or if you want it stored. We have options for all of it. It's the only way that we can truly help a customer base in something that they need. Mm-hmm. For so long, it was so difficult to deal in precious metals. You never knew who to go to, how to do it, who was going to give me the best advice. Mm-hmm. And this is why the platform came out, right? You have the option to speak with somebody if you need help, mm-hmm. or not speak to somebody at all. If you know what you're doing, you can go in there, log in, create your account, and trade as you know that you need to do.
No, it's great. I'm just for a moment, I'm just going to put this up on the screen. People have seen it before, but this is legacypminvestments.com, 1-866-589-0560. Again, we're talking with the founder of Legacy Precious Metals, Charles Thorngren. He's also CEO. So you can, I like the transparency only because if I'm going to call the salesperson, it's also nice to be able to say, okay, well, what is gold at today?
Right.
And you can kind of talk with the salesperson, I guess, and simultaneously be looking at your platform there at legacypminvestments.com. But the other thing you can do is, and this really I found super cool, is you can sell it back. Because you don't think of gold as terribly liquid, right? Like if you have this stuff in a vault, what do you do with it?
Right.
And on your platform, you guys will buy it back?
Absolutely. If you bought it from us and we're holding it for you in storage, you can sell it immediately.
Hmm.
You could if you want to try to time the market, and again, I don't recommend you do it, yeah. but if you want to, you can do that.
The kids like this. The kids, they want to time it.
They do.
Silver is trading at $25.25 right now. It's trading up almost 1%. Gold over 1% in today's market. What is your sense of silver? In the past, I know you felt like it's been very undervalued respective to all the opportunities that, you know, it presents and how it's used.
Right, right.
What's your take on silver right now?
Silver, you know, it's so undervalued that I don't even want to tell you where I think it should be, because then you'd think I was crazy. But
why do you think you don't even have to give me a price target, but what is it that you see in silver that you think the market is missing right now?
The market is stuck on other aspects. Gold right now, mm-hmm. because we're seeing so much turmoil, right? Everyone's mm-hmm. talking inflation, central banks. We have a war going on. We have a president that half the people don't like. This is all gold play, right? That's the central bank stuff. That's your Federal Reserve stuff. Yeah. So the news there is so strong, it overshadows what people should be looking at in silver. Silver, it's much more affordable. It's been undervalued for more than a decade, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Everything that you dream or your kids dream about buying includes silver. Every electronic device, every EV car, every solar panel you put on your house, mm-hmm. everything. It has silver in it. Silver has
so it's a much needed metal.
It's the of the precious metals, it's the one that has the most industrial use. And we are not becoming less technological. We're becoming more technological, more electronics, more electricity-based things. Silver, silver, silver. So if you look at it and say it has the economic principles that's necessary, because it does,
mm-hmm. yeah.
but then you take the fact that it's also so industrial, mm-hmm. it makes sense. Everyone should be buying silver. And it's so easy to say gold because that's what everyone thinks. Mm-hmm. But when I say gold, I am talking gold and silver. So for all you silver people out there, forgive me for not saying silver more, but I love silver. Always have.
Silver and gold. Wasn't that? There was a song, silver and gold, in Rudolph. I remember that one. In Rudolph, the red-nosed reindeer. It's August. It's not even August. It's July, and I'm talking about Christmas, if you can imagine that. But anyway, there's a great silver and gold is the name of the song. But look, I think that the concern that so many of my viewers have, that I think you and I share, is that we're kind of on a trajectory where there's no willingness, there's no ability to course correct, right? We have so much in the way of our national debt. We have such a bloated government. We have an effort to, you know, Joe Biden just announced the other day, actually, they're going to forgive some $39 billion worth of student loans. 800,000 people will be affected. It's like, wait a second. Didn't the Supreme Court say you can't do that? Well, that was for the $450 billion plan, but he came up with a smaller version. Look, every politician, and I'm just going to say this is actually on both sides, right? Like they all want to spend. They all want to spend. They all want that money coming back to their district. And they all want to be able to take a victory lap. So it means spending more money. So I don't know how this changes. I don't think that there is any will to get this under control. With that in mind, I guess, you know, you have to plan your future accordingly. And I think there's the harsh reality that life is just going to keep getting more expensive.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what we know. It's... I've never heard any older person say, oh, this was so much more expensive when I was younger. Mm-hmm. And that's just a fact. As you have a country that tells you that inflation is good, under control, you understand that that means that over time you lose value. You have no choice. If you lose 2% a year, by the time you're retired, you'll be having that same conversation about, I remember bubble gum at a dollar and it's going to be 10. Yeah. That's just the way that it works. And this is why people need to hedge against inflation. They also need something that works regardless. So as the dollar gets weaker, mm-hmm. gold and silver gain in value.
Yeah.
It's just the ultimate hedge, and always has been. And we need that hedge because we
know. And even if the dollar gets stronger, I mean, to your point on the banks and their balance sheet, sometimes when the dollar gets stronger, it's because everybody's fleeing,
right?
The scariness of the world.
Right.
And then, you know, often you do see gold rally in those kind of circumstances as well. I mean, that was, we saw that during that whole regional bank crisis,
right,
where gold was just skyrocketing.
Well, and that's, you know, gold has that unique feature, right? It's the inverse to the dollar, but it's also the most important safety hedge, most mm-hmm. consistent safety hedge out there. So when a dollar runs up, that's just as unsafe as it running down.
Yeah.
There's still a safety environment that metals fit in that process. Uncontrolled anything, you know, economics does not like things that are outside of their parameter. Any economist will sit there and give you a window for where they're comfortable. And anything that happens outside that window is bad.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's unexplained and we don't know how it got there. Mm-hmm. And this is the conversation we're seeing now. Oh, the Fed's saying, oh, inflation came down. We don't really know why, but it came down and that's maybe good. I don't know. You know, and this is what we deal with. And this is why we have the problems that we do, because it's outside of known parameters.
Yeah. And you know, the Fed should know better. I expect what we've seen from the politicians, right? Like it's very rare. There's a guy down in Florida, wonderful, talented politician there in Florida in the Naples area, and the congressman, and he was on the show the other day, and he used to be a financial advisor. So it was like, so what a relief. I was thinking to myself to actually talk to somebody who knows something about this, but most of them don't really.
Right.
And other than your good friend, Newt Gingrich, who had the willingness and the ability to kind of bring everybody together and work on balancing our budget. Like it's not there anymore. It is what it is. They don't understand it. They just want to give out helicopter money to buy votes. The Fed, I don't know. I mean, I'm just beyond disappointed in this Federal Reserve, and I think they could have done better and they should have done better, but we are where we are. So look, it is an important diversification tool. I encourage people to go check out the website. They can also call. They can call 1-866-589-0560. That is the phone number for Legacy Precious Metals. And I know you have a wonderful sales team and people will walk you through it to kind of help explain some of it. But look, diversification is the name of the game.
Always has been. Always, Charles, will be.
It's so good to see you. Thank you, as always.
Great to be here. Thank you.
We'll talk again soon. Wow. All right. So, Charles Thorngren, you know, I was reading so many of your messages there. Food inflation is crazy, says TCC. I agree. Inflation is perhaps the only thing that's come down might be like electronics, right? All the electronics equipment, when you think about what you can buy a flat screen TV today for versus what you could have bought it for 10 years ago, that's where you started to see some real meaningful changes that are helpful to everyday people. But when it comes to the house you live in, the clothes you buy, the food you need to eat, your electricity bills, your gas bills, all of this stuff, like, it's just up, up and away. And you know, there's multiple reasons. You heard Charles talk about just really bad economics in terms of our planning and the unwillingness to actually, didn't you hear me talk about this too, unwillingness to actually balance a budget. But there's lots of reasons. There really, really are. I want to shift gears for just a moment here and talk about another story that's in the news, because if you recall here on this program, just a few weeks ago, we were talking with Professor Avi Loeb, who ran the astrophysics department, was head of the astrophysics department at Harvard University for many, many years. He's now still at Harvard University where he's teaching, and he's now running the Galileo Institute. He's also out with a brand new book, Interstellar, which we'll talk about. But the reason I wanted to have him on today and to talk with all of you is because, he's just back from a pretty big trip where he was looking into recovering space trash, those are his words, off the coast in New Guinea. It comes at a time when we're seeing a united effort, not fully. I mean, like, the Republicans, I think, have kind of led this one, but credit to the Democrats, too. They're demanding more answers after this guy, David Grush, who used to work for the Pentagon, had some rather peculiar things to say. Take a listen.
I thought it was totally nuts, and I thought at first I was being deceived. It was a ruse. People started confiding in me. They approached me. I have plenty of current and former senior intelligence officers that came to me, many of which I knew almost my whole career, that confided in me. They were a part of a program. They named the program. I've never heard of it. And they told me, based on their oral testimony, and they provided me documents and other proof, that there was, in fact, a program that the UAP task force was not read into.
If you're mm-hmm. telling us the truth, mm-hmm. everyone, the entire American public, has been lied to for decades.
Yeah, there's a sophisticated disinformation campaign targeting the U.S. populace, which is extremely unethical and immoral.
You are saying to the human race, for the first time, an official intelligence representative at a high level from the U.S. government is saying publicly, we are not alone.
We're definitely not alone. Absolutely, the data points empirically that we're not alone, yeah.
Do we have bodies? Do we have species of non-human?
Well, naturally, when you recover something that's either landed or crashed, sometimes you encounter dead pilots. And believe it or not, as fantastical as that sounds, it's true.
All right. So, given what Mr. Grush was saying, who, by the way, by all accounts, is like a pretty stand-up guy and not like some kind of kook. In fact, Professor Avi Loeb checked him out and said that, you know, everybody said, look, the guy's, he's legit. So he's coming up with these stories and, you know, talking about things like dead pilots. I mean, it's enough to, you either are like, wait a second, you know, is he on something or is there any there? Are they trying to cover it up? If nothing else, just in this environment in which we live, I think people are super skeptical. And so consequently, they want to know more information. And as a big believer in transparency and the more information, the better, I wholeheartedly support that. So these are unfounded claims that were made by Grush, who is suing to try and get more information about the UAOs, as they're known, that are, you know, apparently, according to him and his sources out there, I should point out, he didn't see anything. So these were all just stories that had been recounted to him, but they were quite, you know, quite something, enough for him to say, okay, I want to take this on. So you have the House Oversight Committee now. It's going to be holding a hearing on UFOs, officially known these days as UAPs, Unidentified Aerial Phenomenon, and that's going to happen next week. It's scheduled for July 26, and it's coming after so many lawmakers, a lot of Republicans, I think Marco Rubio was out in front on this one, started to say, look, we need to have more information because what are these things that we're seeing in the sky? Is this... Are these Chinese spy balloons? Are these U.S. defense efforts? What are they? So I do want to say that Sean Kirkpatrick, who is the director of the All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office, recently told a Senate subcommittee that only a small percentage of UAP reports could be described as anomalous. The majority of unidentified objects reported to AARO, as it's known, demonstrate mundane characteristics of balloons, unmanned aerial systems, clutter, natural phenomenon, or other readily available sources. Now, I think that David Grush would agree with that. His only point is some of them aren't explainable, and he's heard some pretty wild stories, and so he wants more information. Who else wants more information is the professor at Harvard who has dedicated his career to this. He actually worked on a paper with Sean Kirkpatrick that dealt with public information and didn't, you know, have any of the information that Grush alleges exists. So the professor would like to see more and hear more. I should point out that we spoke with him last month, right before he left for the coast in New Guinea, where he was going to be looking for this so-called space trash, right? Where he was looking for anything that was unusual because a meteor had dropped there. And his thought was, you know, what if this had been sent here by another civilization a long time ago? What if we can find some things in there that give us some clues to what else is out there? So I promised I'd have him back because we want to know what he found, right? So happy to have back with us here on the program, fresh back from his quote-unquote fishing expedition for space trash, we welcome Professor Avi Loeb from Harvard University. Good to see you again, sir.
Thanks for having me.
So this is just amazing. Like, you know, I've been just enthralled with everything that you're doing, and I find it so fascinating. The last time you and I spoke, you were off to the coast of New Guinea. You were going to search for this quote-unquote space trash, which you thought might have been left here like a billion plus years ago, perhaps by space aliens from our galaxy, another galaxy. Did you find anything?
Well, I was worried that we might not find anything, but we did. Actually, we found the molten droplets from the surface of this meteorite, this object that collided with Earth back on January 8th, 2014, almost a decade ago. And it was moving very fast, so fast that it was unbound to the sun, and it came from outside the solar system. The U.S. Space Command confirmed it at a 99.999% confidence. We calculated that it was moving faster than 95% of all stars near the sun. So it was moving really fast, may have benefited from artificial propulsion. But moreover, it had material strength tougher than all the space rocks that NASA cataloged over the past decade. So that raised the possibility maybe it was technologically produced, manufactured. And we went there to find out. And the amazing thing is we found these molten droplets from the object when it was exposed to the immense heat from the fireball that was generated around it as it moved through air. And We scraped them off a sled that was covered by magnets that we pulled over the ocean floor, 2 kilometers deep, a little more than a mile. So it's a very deep ocean over there. And we managed to find these particles, these droplets, that are less than a millimeter in size, less than the head of a pin, and weighing a milligram. Just to show you, this is one of the vials that I received by FedEx from the expedition delivered to my doorstep. Uh-huh. And of course, it took FedEx a few days to bring it. And
can you see that one more time?
Well, what you see is mostly volcanic ash, basically black powder, mm-hmm. that was the most abundant constituent attracted to our magnets. But when we filtered it out using a mesh, we removed all the tiny particles from volcanic activity. We were left with bigger particles, roughly a quarter of a millimeter in size or bigger. And when we look at them through a microscope, we saw these beautiful metallic marbles. My daughter asked if I can give one to her so that she can put it on a necklace. I said, it's smaller than the head of a pin. You can't really thread them. These are quite beautiful to see because they're spherical. They're just like marbles. Mm-hmm. And they are the leftover material from this meteorite. We found it mostly along the path, the expected path of this object. And now we are analyzing them. And we hope to tell that whether the material is different than solar system material. We can date it using radioactive isotopes, clocks that date the material. Mm-hmm. And we can also look for rare elements at a much higher concentration. If, for example, it was like Voyager, a spacecraft that would appear as a meteor by colliding with another planet, the composition would be quite unusual. And the droplets would contain some rare elements. Just imagine computer screens, semiconductors melted.
Wow. So what does it tell you? I mean, is it just stuff that formed in the ocean or formed on the actual rock? Or is it actually alien in origin?
Well, that's the key question. mm-hmm. So we have the materials. That's good news. Mm-hmm. I was worried that we might not find anything. It was very difficult, challenging task because we're talking about millimeter scale droplets across mm-hmm. a region that is 10 kilometers in size, the size of Boston. And, going with a sled that is roughly a meter in width, and we did 26 lines back and forth, crisscrossing that region. Mm-hmm. We knew roughly where the meteor path is, but mm-hmm. it was very challenging and we recovered it. So now we found the spherules primarily along the meteor path. So we also compared it to other regions far away. And now the next task is studying them and figuring out what they're made of and whether the object was technological in origin. And, we should have an answer, hopefully, within a month or so after we go through the rigorous analysis. And we do it in three laboratories, one at UC Berkeley, another one at Harvard, and the third one at the Bruker Corporation in Berlin, Germany.
Well, we'll have to have you back in a few weeks to discuss those findings. In the meantime, since you've been gone, there's been a lot of emphasis and focus on the whole possibility that there is something else out there, including from Congress. We're now seeing a real bipartisan effort. Marco Rubio has been vocal about this. Senator Chuck Schumer has been vocal about this. They want some hearings. They're scheduling hearings to find out more information. How do you view that? I mean, I know you've been in this field a long time, and sometimes it's kind of poo-pooed and people kind of roll their eyes and there's all these science fiction movies about aliens, but this is something that you treat pretty seriously. Are you pleased that Congress seems to want to have more information?
Definitely. First of all, it normalizes the discussion. We need to behave as adults. If there is a neighbor in our cosmic street, we want to know about it. I mean, the public wants to know about it. Now the government wants to know about it. And so let's find out the facts. And the fundamental question is there fire behind this smoke? Okay, so there are people talking about it. Grush was saying the government is in possession of materials from a crash site. And we don't know whether that's real or not because he didn't actually see those materials. Mm-hmm. He just heard people talk about them and saw reports about them. So We want to know that because anything interstellar has nothing to do with national security. It's not the privy of the U.S. president to know about it more than anyone else. It should be knowledge that is shared by all humans. So we want to know. And obviously, Congress will go in that direction. And I'm very curious to see if they have materials. And if they do, I would be delighted to apply the same instruments that we are using for the meteorite sample that we have, to apply them to their materials. We can immediately tell if the materials are from outside of the solar system because they would have a different age, a different isotope ratios, and things like that. So it's only for the government to come forward and say, okay, this is what we retrieved. We want scientists to figure it out. I would be very pleased to be engaged in such a study. The question is, do they have those materials and do they have some knowledge that we haven't heard about?
So you're in this field, you are sort of the guy in this field. The government's never come to you, though, and said, Professor Loeb, we need your help. Can you help us analyze this?
No, they didn't. So you can interpret that in two ways. One, that they don't have anything, or that they do have it and it's behind the veil of national security for some reason, bureaucratic reason. If it's the latter, let's break down this mold and open it up for scientific inquiry, because this is knowledge that should be shared by all humans. You know, we want to know if we have a neighbor. One way to find out what happens in our street is to look for objects that arrive to our backyard from the street. That's an obvious thing. You check your backyard and often you see the rocks that were there in the context of the solar system. These are asteroids and comets that we are familiar with. But every now and then you might see a tennis ball that was thrown by a neighbor.
Mm-hmm. And so the thinking is maybe there's a few tennis balls thrown by neighbors right here, you know, on Earth. And we need to go out and find those, which is what you've been doing. Here's a question on the government. I mean, again, like you're saying, they haven't approached. I know you actually did do some work, though. Have you not? With the Defense Department, I know that I read the paper that you guys published, but that was not with any kind of information that was not public.
Right. Sean Kirkpatrick, the head of Aero, visited my home and suggested that we collaborate on a theoretical paper, just talking about what can be learned if future data will be assembled. Mm-hmm. So it was not based on existing evidence. It was just hypothetical. And we wrote this paper. It was fun to collaborate with him, but I wouldn't hold it as evidence. In fact, I was worried that we are talking about things that I don't have any evidence for at the moment. By the way, the sky is not classified and the oceans are not classified. So we, in principle, can find the evidence ourselves. We don't need to rely on politicians to tell us what the truth is about interstellar space. That's the whole reason that I'm doing this, because I see it as part of astronomy, trying to figure out our cosmic neighborhood. And for the first time in human history, humans put their hands on materials from an object that came from outside the solar system in this expedition that I led. That was a historic event, irrespective of whether this material is natural, came from an environment very different than the solar system, or if it's obviously, if it was technological in origin, then it would have much bigger implications. But irrespective, I think it's historic. And it's possible the government did it before us.
Not to interrupt you, but Professor Loeb, right? Like, everybody knew that this had hit into the ocean, right? Like, people knew that it was there. And the one sort of thing I was thinking about as you went off was, if there was something, one would hope our government got there first ahead of you. I know that you had to raise the funding and you were successful in doing so. And, you're continuing to seek funding at your institute to try and continue this study, but our government has all the funding it needs. So one would think that they would be there first, but there's this other little thing going on that, you know, it is the government. It is pretty bureaucratic and they have their own sets of challenges. Through the grapevine, like, do you hear things? I mean, some of the stuff that David Grush was talking about, had you heard any similar stories in your own circle?
I didn't. And as far as I know, nobody reached out to get the materials that we were going after. So, I mean, the way I see it, the day job of the government is national security. Okay, that's what they care about. And anything coming from interstellar space does not adhere to national borders. You know, they never care about, you know, how we split the land on this planet. They would come to visit Earth as a whole. So I see it as my work as a scientist being complementary to their work. And therefore, you know, we just work together. And indeed, the Department of Defense actually defended my thesis that this object, this meteor, is interstellar in origin. And they wrote a formal letter to NASA confirming at a 99.999% confidence that that's the case. So, and altogether, I received a lot of support from the direction of Washington, D.C., and I see it as a partnership between science and government. Mm-hmm. Frankly, it's possible that they are puzzled. They don't know what to make of what they have. I would be happy to help them.
Well, maybe that was in part why Sean Kirkpatrick came to your house to help, you know, to ask you to collaborate on that paper, because they can only get so far. At some point, you're going to need the expertise of someone like yourself, right, to be able to analyze and think this through. I mean, from a theoretical perspective, I mean, there's so much. Last time we spoke, you were talking about black holes. You know, you can get into some very interesting theories of physics and space and time, and even just the fact that this, any estimate of how old this particular to say the name again for me, that of the meteor,
the first interstellar meteor, we call it IM-1. And we are trying indeed to gauge the age of the spherules. Yeah. And that is based on radioactive isotopes that can be used as clocks, because they have a finite lifespan, just like time bombs. They disappear after a while. And if you just measure the abundance of those radioactive isotopes compared to their decay products, the products of their decay when they end their life, you can tell how old the sample is. And we use that. We don't have a final answer yet. And one thing we need to do is compare the spherules, these droplets that were along the meteor path, to things that we find in the background, far away. And so it takes time. It takes some weeks for us to go through the materials, but we have them. And we also use the very best experts in the world. I gave it to three groups so that I can compare notes and get to a robust conclusion. A lot of people speculate about what we have and make negative or positive comments. I think it's just premature. And just wait a few weeks and we'll give you the answer.
No, I hear you. I mean, it's so important to look at your evidence and then go from there. Exclusive of that, like aside from that, putting that aside for a second, what's sort of your sense of whether or not there's something else out there?
Yeah.
So what do you think?
We sent five probes to interstellar space. These are Voyager 1, Voyager 2, Pioneer 10, Pioneer 11, and New Horizons. And within 10,000 years, they will exit the outskirts of the solar system, the Oort cloud. And then they would become space trash. They would not be operational. And just think about another civilization that preceded us by billions of years. I mean, obviously, they had more time to send many more such probes. And altogether, it's possible that interstellar space is littered with space trash, you know, with a lot of dysfunctional probes that are not operational anymore. And if one of them collides with Earth, it would appear as a meteor. So, you know, it's a new way of studying what lies outside of the solar system using microscopes, not telescopes. That's what we were using, microscopes. And it was not done before. You know, before we looked for radio signals. It's just like waiting for a phone call at home. You need the counterpart to send you a message when you are listening. However, if you can find packages next in your backyard, when the senders are dead, you know, they just keep accumulating over time. And
so that's what you're looking for.
I, My sense is that it's quite possible and likely, given that the first three interstellar objects were so weird. You know, when we looked at them, they had properties different than space rocks that we are familiar with. It's quite likely that we will be surprised that there is technological debris in interstellar space, and the U.S. government had some materials already. I don't know that for a fact, but at least that's what Grash was talking about. Mm-hmm. And we, soon enough, you know, in the coming years, we will know more about it. And, you know, the more I study through the Galileo project, the more data we will have. So, you know, it's just a matter of looking, seeking for the evidence, because a lot of people have an opinion without checking whether their opinion is validated by any data.
Yeah, no, it's worth looking into. You have a new book, by the way.
Right.
That people can get on Amazon. Tell us about that.
It's called Interstellar, and it should come out in August 2023.
Oh, one more time, if you would. Let's take a good look.
Yeah, it is Interstellar, and it's already available for pre-orders in all outlets that sell books. And it will discuss exactly your questions, the implications for humanity, what's the likelihood that we are not alone, that we have neighbors. I think we are heading towards a very exciting frontier here where science will open new knowledge that we haven't anticipated. It will inspire us to be better. And, you know, perhaps we, instead of focusing on conflicts here on Earth, this rock that we were born on, we will focus our attention on something more constructive, which is exploring space and extending the longevity of the human species to be an interstellar species.
Interesting and inspiring and thought-provoking in every way. We are always delighted to talk to you. We look forward to hearing whatever it is that you learn regarding the substance that you found there. Professor Avi Loeb, who runs the Galileo Institute there at Harvard. And we will make sure to put in the show notes for anybody listening a link to Amazon so they can check out your book, Interstellar. Thank you so much, sir.
Thanks for having me, Trish.
All right. I know. You think I'm crazy, right? But I find it really interesting. I do. You know, it's just, it's crazy, right? Like, it's totally wacky. I mean, there was that story. Did you guys see that out in Las Vegas a few weeks ago where, like, these people, this family, like, called up 911 and they're like, oh my gosh, there's these like 9 foot tall green aliens in our backyard. And then it was wild. It was crazy. The police like came and they were like, yeah, this is weird because somebody else was just saying they saw something just fall right out of the sky. And then it turns out like the police department put a camera on their rooftop. What is that? Like, when does a police officer do that? I mean, it's just, I know we're all, actually there were some really funny comments I was looking at, really, really funny. And I saw the Star Trek references as well. I liked that show when I was a kid. Sorry. All right? I know. Anyway, I think it's really interesting. And I think it is important to talk about right now ahead of the hearing, right? So they are having this hearing. We saw in today's news, ladies and gentlemen, that John Kirby, who's a spokesperson there for the National Security Council, he admitted that UFOs and UAPs are beginning to cause problems for the U.S. Air Force. This is really interesting. And it was actually, so we got this question by one of the reporters over at News Nation. News Nation was the network that ran that interview you just saw with David Grush, who was saying that, you know, there's been all these reports. And so the reporter asked if it was really a legitimate issue for the administration. And the response was quite interesting. The response was that some of these phenomena we know have already had an impact on our training ranges. You know, when pilots are out trying to do training in the air and they see these things, they're not sure what they are, and it can have an impact on their ability to perfect their skills. So it's already had an impact there. Now, John Kirby goes on, we're not saying what they are or what they're not. We're saying that there's something our pilots are seeing. We're saying it has had an effect on the training operations, and so we want to get to the bottom of it. And so this is why now we're going to have this briefing, this hearing, where we're going to try to get to the bottom of it. So stay tuned for that next week. Anyway, good to see so many of you guys here. I see Willie and Cortez. I'm just sort of figuring out how to do this with adding some of your comments here to the actual video. On Facebook, Chuck, good to have you here. You've been, I think, here for the entire episode. So we love that. We love that. I do see my friend Leslie as well, who I met over on Locals, trishregan.locals.com. Leslie, welcome back. So many, again, familiar faces. It's nice to kind of build this little community. And I'm laughing because I'm looking at Mike O'Donnell here, who has had some funny things to say. Today's sunlight started its journey 100,000 years ago, plus 15 minutes to get here. Mike, always good to hear from you. You know, I was really kind of getting a kick out of some of these comments that you guys had, some funny stuff. Anyway, like I said, give it, you know, this is okay. This first prize may go to Don. Don, if you're still here, you said, given government bureaucracy and inefficiency, they may just be getting memos from the 1950s now. So that is really, really great. Anyway, like I said, it's nice to have this live opportunity with all of you and to be able to get to see you and talk with you one-on-one. A quick reminder, if you haven't, do subscribe to the show. This is a pretty interesting time. Again, the headlines today, including the Disney breakup that seems to be coming, the TV assets like ABC News, which would include The View, possibly being sold off here. That's a big deal. One analyst over at Wells Fargo estimating an $8 billion price tag for those TV assets at Disney. ESPN possibly might look to be a joint venture, maybe with a tech company like Apple. Again, nothing official, just pretty remarkable that Bob Iger now is looking to pare down. I think it's a wise move because they've kind of taken on too much. And there's a political overtone, of course, to so much of the content these days. It doesn't get very, very well received. Trump now looking like he's going to be indicted. Again, it's like I've said, very, very hard to keep up with all these indictments. But one thing is very clear. There are people that do not want him to run. And so I think that's not going to sit well with the American public. I suspect that his numbers will get higher and higher and higher and higher. The more they go after him, the more people are going to say, well, I don't like this, I don't appreciate this, and the more support and the more rallying you will likely see around Donald Trump in the future. If you haven't subscribed, do me the favor. Make sure you do. Great to have you here. We'll keep talking. If you could hit that bell, if you're on YouTube, make sure you hit the bell. That way you know when we are live. Love seeing you all and appreciate you staying here the whole, what did we do? An hour and change today. Love seeing you guys. Thank you so much. Cheers. We'll talk tomorrow.